Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, February 24th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page, Iowa mulls more bobcat hunts as population grows. Dubuque, Delaware, and Jones counties could be added to legal harvest zone by Eric Hogstrom. Jeff Berger saw something a couple of years ago that he had never seen in the wild. Quote, it was a bobcat in the Worthington, Iowa area, end quote, said Berger of Dubuque. Quote, I hadn't seen one before. I was in awe, end quote. An increasing number of bobcats in the area has prompted statewide wildlife officials to consider adding Delaware, Dubuque, and Jones County to Iowa's legal harvest zone for the animals, which were once considered all but eradicated in the state. Quote, the bobcat population continues to grow and expand from the south up through Iowa, end quote, said Vince Evilsizer Ferber and wetland biologist with the Department of Natural Resources. Quote, there were very few in our state and they were protected for many years, end quote. Bobcats originally were native to Iowa, but they were mostly wiped out by human settlement and loss of woodsy habitat by the early 1900s. They were protected as an endangered species in the state by 1977. Quote, then we began to see some bobcats move back to Iowa in the late 1990s, primarily from the south, Evilsizer said. Their numbers continued to grow, end quote. About 5,000 to 8,000 bobcats now live in Iowa, according to recent wildlife surveys. Brian Preston, Dubuque County Conservation Board Executive Director, said he believes as many as 200 bobcats reside locally. Quote, we've always had a remnant population. I can remember releasing some bobcats 30 years ago that had been incidentally trapped, Preston said. Then bobcat immigration from the south really bolstered the population. We're getting a lot of trail camera pictures of bobcats. In this past fall, we had a lot of roadkills. Our rabbit population also has increased in recent years, and bobcats have responded to that, end quote. About twice the size of a common house cat, bobcats survive on a diet that is about 95% made up of rabbits, mice, voles, and squirrels, according to DNR studies. They prefer to live on the edges of timber and grasslands, and the cats are often on the move due to the territorial nature of the males. Bobcats in Iowa are known to travel as far as 10 miles per week. As the bobcat population grew, state wildlife officials launched a limited bobcat harvesting season in 2007, primarily in Iowa's southern counties. Counties were added to the zones as the bobcat population expanded into new areas. Jackson County has been included in the bobcat harvest zone since the 2018-2019 season. Quote, with all the timber you have up there, you have a good habitat for bobcats, said Craig Sweet, president of Iowa Trappers Association. There must be quite a few cats in that area, end quote. Northwest Illinois and Southwest Wisconsin also have sizable bobcat populations and state-regulated harvest. Illinois hunters and trappers take about 300 bobcats per season, according to state data. Two bobcats were harvested by hunters or trappers in Joe Davies County during the four-month season that ended February 15th, and nine were taken the season before. In Wisconsin, preliminary data from the 2020 to 2021 season shows 16 bobcats taken in Grant County, 15 in Iowa County, 8 in Crawford County, and one in Lafayette County, according to the state's Natural Resources Department. The proposed rule in Iowa would allow a hunter or trapper to take one bobcat in Delaware, Dubuque, and Jones County during the season, which begins on Saturday of the first full weekend in November and concludes January 31st. Quote, I think it would be a great control method to keep them in check so they don't get any disease, end quote, said Berger, who has been trapping for about 40 years. Preston said a well-regulated, limited harvest would have a little impact on Dubuque County's growing population. Quote, we're already seeing more mortality through incidental trapping and roadkill, he said. Bobcats should be managed so that we have them well into the future, end quote. Our next front page article, County OKs deer roundabouts. Plan also includes a turning lane and walking trail and costs much less than prior proposal by Benjamin Fisher. The latest proposal to alleviate road congestion and safety concerns near Dubuque County's largest employer includes the installation of two roundabouts and a turning lane. It also comes with a significantly reduced price tag than an earlier proposal. for Both Infrastructure and Environmental unveiled the latest proposal this week to the Dubuque County Supervisors, who approved the concept. It includes adding two roundabouts, a southbound turning lane on South John Deere Road between West John Deere and Peru Roads, and a walking trail with pedestrian crossings on both South John Deere Road and US 52. Quote, "Our goals here are to reduce accidents, reduce travel delays, and boost freight mobility," end quote, said Aaron Muniza, senior client manager for Foth. The project is expected to cost $6.8 million, with $5.4 million covered by a federal better utilizing investment to leverage developing grant the county secured in 2019. The county qualified for the grant following a 2018 traffic study of intersections around John Deere Dubuque Works that aimed to analyze employees' traffic patterns. It found that 3,000 people came in and out of the plant daily, including about 270 semi-tractors, trailers, and that the nearby roads are frequently used by other motorists as well. The current proposal calls for the roundabouts to be installed on South John Deere Road, one at the Southern Parking entrance and one at the intersection with Peru Road. Quote, "There will be new lighting at each of the roundabouts and in the middle of the roundabouts. We will have some wildflower plantings," end quote, Muniza said. The project also includes a new concrete walking trail that in part would run along West John Deere from the plant to US 52. The latest design differs significantly from a 2019 proposal shared when the county received the federal grant. That plan included the addition of a four-way intersection with traffic signals at the plant's southern parking entrance. It also included several project elements such as improving the intersection of US 52 and West John Deere Road, complete with traffic signals and major repairs to the northwest arterial itself. The new proposal's $6.8 million price tag is lower than the $10.5 million originally projected because the county, City of Dubuque, and Iowa Department of Transportation are in the process of, quote, decoupling, end quote, the John Deere Road corridor projects from others on the Northwest arterial. Quote, "We've all realized that it's going to be easier to administer this separately," end quote, County Engineer Anthony Bardeck said. That the proposed new trail along West John Deere eventually would cross US 52 at grade constituted one of the only areas of concern for county supervisors. Quote, "I was in law enforcement for years and know how they drive out there," end quote, said County Supervisor Harley Pothoff, a retired road patrol captain with the Dubuque County Sheriff's Department. Supervisors Ann McDonoghue and Jay Wickham both also shared some concerns about the trail as proposed, but said that peace could always come back to the board later. On South John Deere Road, northbound traffic will be slowed significantly by the roundabouts before reaching the trail's crossing, Muniza said. Quote, "As traffic enters this area, it's going to keep traffic going, but will reduce the overall speed of people coming through here because of the roundabouts, where people will be in the 18 to 20 miles per hour range," end quote, he said. Construction on the project is now expected to begin in the spring of 2022 and last until the spring or summer of 2023. The plan is for work to disrupt traffic as little as possible. Quote, "When we start construction in the spring, we'll start work at either end of the project with some temporary pavement," Muniza said. "Then we are going to shut down between Peru and West John Deere Road. John Deere then are just going to have all their employees exit to Peru Road and Herber Road during that time," end quote. Steve Mai, facility engineering supervisor at John Deere Dubuque Works, said officials are excited about the project, both in concept and design. Officials were consulted throughout the recent design period. Quote, "The roundabouts and the whole design will address a lot of the major concerns we have with the intersections," he said. "The trail system will be of great benefit to a lot of users," end quote. Our last front page article, Chamber voices concern over proposed minimum wage hike. Dubuque Business Group says local economy not yet strong enough to bear $15 rate sought by Democrats, by Benjamin Fisher. The Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce recently announced it has, quote, significant concerns, end quote, about a proposal to increase the federal minimum wage to $15 per hour. The local economic development organization stressed that some local businesses in its membership are struggling to survive in an economy that has been upended by the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, "This is what we're hearing from small restaurants, retail, mom and pops, and seasonal especially," end quote, said Chamber CEO Molly Grover, quote, small businesses are suffering significantly in this economic and health crisis, end quote. Chamber officials indicated they were open to discussing increases after the economy recovers. Quote, while we do believe there is room for a nuanced conversation about adjustments to the minimum wage, we do not believe now is the time, end quote, a press release stated. President Joe Biden and congressional Democrats have proposed raising the hourly minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 by 2025 as part of the next round of COVID-19 pandemic relief. The proposal also would phase out the credit that allows employees receiving tips, such as servers and bartenders, to earn a lower hourly wage. While Biden has expressed some willingness to compromise on including the wage increase in his relief proposal, congressional Democrats have pushed back against that concession. Iowa Republicans U.S. Senator Joni Ernst and U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson are among those who have been vocally opposed to the proposal. Quote, I've heard from countless Iowans about how this would destroy livelihoods in our rural communities and our rural main streets, end quote, Hinson said while touring the district last week. But Democrats such as U.S. Representatives Ron Kind and Mark Pocan, both of Wisconsin, and Cherry Bustos of Illinois have pushed for such an increase for years. Iowa's minimum wage currently matches the federal rate, but a recent report from Governor Kim Reynolds' Economic Recovery Board, which outlines the next steps for pandemic recovery, indicates that the average renter earning $13.43 per hour would need the equivalent of 1.2 full-time jobs to afford the cost of an average apartment. Quote, to afford the current level of rent and utilities without paying more than 30% of income on housing, a household must earn $2,679 monthly or $32,151 annually, end quote, the report reads. The Federal Congressional Budget Office found that 7 million workers would see big benefits from the minimum wage increase, but also that more than 1 million workers likely would lose their jobs. Eric Munzhauer, head of the Economic Department at University of Dubuque, said that projection aligns with existing research into minimum wage increases. Quote, the overwhelmingly majority of academic studies shows that increasing minimum wage causes unemployment, especially among the least skilled and the very young, end quote, he said, pointing to studies from Seattle after the minimum wage was raised there to $15 per hour. Quote, what happened was that life improved for the people who had jobs and kept working the same hours, but the average worker saw a significant reduction in hours, end quote. Brian Peckham, an economics professor at University of Wisconsin-Platteville, said such unbalanced impacts are typical with any economic reform. Quote, there has never been any type of government program, state, federal, what have you, that hasn't had winners and losers, he said. We just have to find some way to compensate the losers so they don't find themselves in dire financial straits, end quote. Peckman also pointed out that conditions vary drastically by location, so making a guess as to the proposal's impact on the tri-state area specifically would be difficult. Munzhauer said phasing in a wage increase at least should soften the blow to employers and allow for reassessment of its impact. A possible preview of how a minimum wage increase might play out exists in Joe Davies County, which is the middle of Illinois' phased-in minimum wage increase to $15 per hour. Quote, I have not heard anything from business owners about it being detrimental to their business moving forward, end quote, said Galena Area Chamber of Commerce Director Angela DeVere. Quote, there's a lot of people out there in the workforce who could benefit from having the $15, end quote. In particular, she said the city's lack of affordable housing has made it challenging to keep shops and restaurants open downtown. Quote, for the workforce we don't have the housing to support them, and what we do have is not affordable, DeVere said. I'm hoping with the increase in wages, some of our housing comes within their reach, end quote. Our next article, students to relocate for construction. While a new Resurrection Elementary School is being built, students will attend class on the St. Anthony Catholic Church campus, by Ali Hinga. Students at Resurrection Elementary School in Dubuque will have a temporary home for the 2021 to 2022 school year. They will attend classes in the school building on the St. Anthony Catholic Catholic Church campus, while a new resurrection school is being constructed. Quote, we believe this to be a stronger move to keep all the resurrection students on one campus, end quote, said Philip Borman, chief administrator of Holy Family Catholic Schools. Church of the Resurrection and Holy Family leaders plan to demolish a wing of the current resurrection school and construct a three-story building in its place to serve elementary students. The project is on track to start after the last day of the current school year, and construction is expected to last about 1 year, said the Reverend Philip Skibbs, pastor of Church of the Resurrection. Originally, officials planned to keep resurrection students on campus during construction, housing some students in portable classes, others in the church, and younger children in the wing of the building not affected by construction. Another opportunity opened up, however, when St. Anthony and Holy Family leaders decided to move students at St. Anthony Our Lady of Guadalupe Spanish Immersion Program to the Walhart Catholic School High School and Mazzucchelli Catholic Middle School campuses next school year. That created a new space for the resurrection students while their school is under construction. Borman said the move means that there won't be students on site at resurrection during a construction project. Staff and students can use a building designed to be a school, and it will save the expenses of bringing in portable classrooms. Quote, I think it's about keeping our church community together, preschool through grade 5, Borman said. That way, we are not fragmented across one site in the portables and the church base. End quote. Gibbs noted that with the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, students would have needed to be spaced out further if they stayed on the Resurrection campus, which would have required more space. The Reverend Stephen Rosenke, pastor of St. Anthony Catholic Church, said church leaders sent a letter to parishioners to ask their input on the move and received an, quote, overwhelmingly positive response, end quote. Quote, there's nothing complicated about it, end quote, he said. Quote, it's just as simple as being nice to our neighbors here, end quote. Resurrection students will make use of both school buildings on the St. Anthony Church campus, Borman said. Students who normally ride the school bus to Resurrection will be able to ride to St. Anthony. And at the end of the process, Resurrection students will have a new school. Quote, we're excited for it to get up and going again with the construction and the planning, so it's very positive for our school community, end quote, Borman said. News in brief, CWD confirmed in Jackson County, new cases in Dubuque, Clayton counties. A deer with chronic wasting disease has been found in Jackson County for the first time, state officials announced Tuesday. Additionally, another deer with the always fatal disease was found in Dubuque County, and two more were reported in Clayton County. Chronic wasting disease primarily affects deer and elk and is spread through fluids such as saliva and blood. Sick animals lose weight, display abnormal behavior such as excessive salivation and loose bodily functions. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources reported that the second CWD positive deer in Dubuque County was found near US 151 between Dubuque and Cascade, while the deer in Jackson County was in the northern part of the county. Both were not far outside of the existing Dubuque disease management zone established by the DNR after the first Dubuque County confirmed case was found in a deer killed by a vehicle outside of Dubuque in 2018. Quote, although we expect some spread just outside of our existing zones, it's not what we like to see, end quote, said Tyler Harms, deer program leader for the Iowa DNR, in a press release. Quote, we will release the boundaries of our existing zones to encompass these new positives, end quote. In all, 21 more wild deer in the state were found to have CWD. With two more cases, Clayton County now has had about 15. To date, 111 wild deer have tested positive for the disease since it was confirmed in Iowa in 2013. The disease has not been confirmed in Delaware or Jones County. Woman accused of stealing $43,000 from church, Maquita, Iowa. Police said a Maquita woman stole more than $43,000 from a church for personal purchases. Annie M. Duffy Doherty, 40, is charged in Iowa District Court of Jackson County with first-degree theft, unauthorized use of a credit card totaling more than $10,000, and forgery, all felony charges. Court documents state that Duffy Doherty was working as a secretary at Maquita United Church of Christ when, from September 2019 to August 2020, she made, quote, unauthorized purchases, end quote, with the church's bank account and credit card that totaled more than $43,000. Documents also state that Duffy Doherty forged the signature of a Mary Hayward on 21 church checks totaling about $13,600 from February to May of last year. Hayward is authorized to sign checks on behalf of the church. Quote, during the investigation, it was discovered the defendant was forging checks to cover unauthorized purchases that she was making, end quote, documents state. Her next court appearance is set for Friday, February 26. Police, the Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Department reported Tyrese W. Jenkins, 25, was arrested at 5:30 a.m. Tuesday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging domestic assault and two counts of child endangerment. Court documents state that Jenkins assaulted Lakeland N. Owens, 24, on Friday in the presence of their two children, ages 3 and 2. J. M. Martin, 33, of Bellevue, Iowa, was arrested at 4:57 a.m. Tuesday in the 200 block of Railroad Avenue in Dubuque on a warrant charging third-degree theft. Our next article, 25 more virus cases in Dubuque County. Joe Davies County launches vaccination call center to assist older residents. Telegraph Herald. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Tuesday's developments included no additional COVID-19-related deaths were reported in the 10-county Telegraph Herald coverage area between 5 p.m. Monday and 5 p.m. Tuesday. On Tuesday, Joe Davies County officials announced the establishment of a call center to help residents 65 and older navigate the vaccination registration process. They can call 815-591-2673 from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Friday, and volunteers staffing the line can answer questions and provide help with signing up to receive a vaccine. Officials noted that calling does not guarantee those older residents an appointment at the next clinic, but they can be placed on a waiting list and will be contacted when an appointment is available. In Iowa, as of 5 p.m. Tuesday, Dubuque County had a 14-day positivity rate of 3.4%, while Clayton County was at 2.3%, Delaware County 2%, Jackson County 4.3%, and Jones County 1.8%. The state did not provide new county-level hospitalization data Tuesday. As of 5 p.m. Tuesday, one local long-term care facility remained on the state's outbreak list. According to the state website, Stone Hill Care Center in Dubuque has had 76 positive COVID-19 cases, one of which came in the past 14 days. Statewide, Iowa had 415 additional residents confirmed to have COVID-19 in the 24-hour period that ended at 5 p.m. Tuesday. That increased the to-date total to 333,502. A total of 5,400 related deaths also had been reported, an increase of 26 from 5 p.m. Monday. As of 5 p.m. Tuesday statewide, 299,048 residents had received one dose of vaccine, while 148,260 were fully vaccinated. In Wisconsin, Grant County officials announced Tuesday that shipments of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine are delayed due to recent weather, which could impact vaccination clinics this week. County officials said they expect to be able to reschedule those impacted by the end of next week. Lafayette County Health Department officials reported that they do not expect to receive more first doses of the vaccine for at least a week and asked residents not to call before March 1 to ask about an appointment. Statewide, 566 additional cases were confirmed Tuesday, pushing Wisconsin's total to 560,564. There were 33 additional related deaths reported, so that toll rose to 6,317. Also statewide, 449,420 residents had received one dose of vaccine as of Tuesday, while 366,096 were fully vaccinated. In Illinois, 1,665 additional COVID-19 cases were reported Tuesday, pushing the total to 1,177,320. There were 27 additional related deaths, so that toll moved to 20,330. Statewide, 1,073,274 residents had received one dose of vaccine as of Tuesday, while 590,854 were fully vaccinated. Almanac. Today is Wednesday, February 24th, the 55th day of 2021. There are 310 days left in the year. On this date in 1803, in its Marbury versus Madison decision, the Supreme Court established judicial review of the constitutionality of statutes. In 1868, the U.S. House of Representatives impeached President Andrew Johnson by a vote of 126-47. Following his attempted dismissal of Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton, Johnson was later acquitted by the the Senate. In 1938, the first nylon Bristol toothbrush manufactured by DuPont under the name Dr. West's Miracle Toothbrush went on sale. In 1942, the SS Struma, a charter ship attempting to carry nearly 800 Jewish refugees from Romania to British-mandated Palestine, was torpedoed by a Soviet submarine in the Black Sea. All but one of the refugees perished. Letters to the editor. Farber already contributing to Dubuque community in multiple ways, but from Annie and Jeff Morton, Bradley Street, Dubuque. I grew up next to Susan. She and her family were and still are great friends of myself and my parents. Her father, Frank, was a hard-working businessman, something she has clearly inherited from him. When Susan moved back to her hometown of Dubuque, she saw a great potential for the city. She contacted my husband, a local architect, to help her create her vision. With the help of many others, she worked to improve a cable car square, and many other developments. Susan and her spouse also opened a restaurant, Magoo's, which provides many jobs for young college students here in Dubuque. In addition to her business contributions, Susan has been involved with many philanthropic endeavors for the city. Her philanthropic efforts have primarily focused on Dubuque's art and culture environment, which has provided many opportunities for the creative and social aspect of the city. I can't think of a better person to represent the people in Ward 1 of City Council. We will be voting for Susan Farber. The next one, Del Toro endorses Pregler for council seat. From Louis Del Toro, Gillam Street, Dubuque. After listening to both candidates' stances, I proudly endorse John Pregler and urge Ward 1 residents to support him March 2nd. I'm confident that with his 10 years on the Long Range Planning Commission and his work on the reimagined Dubuque plan, John knows where we've been in the direction we need to go as a city. John understands very personally the struggles many families have faced due to COVID-19. That's why he vows to be a voice for the elderly, the retired, and the many low-income families struggling in Dubuque. He understands many have lost jobs, had wages and hours cut, or simply have had to choose between staying home with kids or working. He himself had to take a pay cut. John has a sensible approach that involves keeping costs low for citizens while everyone can get back on their feet. John has reviewed city budgets for the past decade and has also been active at council meetings and even hosted a work group for city employees on risk analysis. The Telegraph Herald editorial board endorsement was spot on. His experience working with government operations is what we need at the council table. John is ready to step up in day one and work with anyone to secure the best future possible for our great city. His is a needed voice at the council table, and I urge citizens of Ward 1 to vote John Pregler on March 2nd. The author is a former Dubuque City Council member. And the next letter, taxing bodies should offset increases, from Nick Lucy, Fenland Place, Dubuque. Stating that local Dubuque County property taxes will increase due to the increased cost of purchasing property or a home is wrong and misleading. When these costs go up, there ought to be an inversely and proportional reduction in the taxing rate so as to remain neutral. No property tax increase. If a local taxing body, such as the school district, county, or city budget, needs an increase, they should have to justify and be transparent. Good government services do cost money. The next letter, Farber's small business experience makes her best choice for Ward 1, from Dale Dulcine, Valentine Drive, Dubuque. Since 2003, I have been working on historic restoration projects with Susan Farber. Although the Telegraph Herald cites, quote, broad and deep knowledge of city issues, including historical context, end quote, as John Pregler's strengths, I would much rather see a, quote, wealth of business acumen, end quote, in making city council decisions. Those are Farber's strengths. I am a small business owner, as is my daughter, and Susan understands our daily lives and the issues we confront trying to operate successfully. She knows how to market a business, how to hire and engage employees, how to create a great product, and is the walking definition of customer service. Additionally, she understands how city government can influence profit margins. Who better than an owner of a restaurant to understand how the pandemic has affected their business and its employees and customers? Susan's resume is exactly why she is the best choice for Ward 1 council seat. And our last letter, Pregler committed to serving Dubuque, from Stephen Pregler, Garfield Avenue, Dubuque. Few people know and understand Dubuque and its incredible history the way John Pregler does. John is a lifelong local historian. His local research has contributed to the history books in more ways than one. John was born and raised in Dubuque and is no stranger to Dubuque politics and community service. Our father, Walter Pregler, has spent 55 years serving the citizens of Dubuque in many capacities. John has that same desire and commitment not only to represent Ward 1, but all of Dubuque. John is knowledgeable of city affairs, follows council proceedings, and served on Dubuque's Long Range Planning Advisory Commission for the past 10 years. He is willing to press for further discussion on topics citizens feel have not been fully researched and vetted. John's vision for Dubuque comes with an eye for fiscal responsibility. He has a BA in Business Administration from the University of Dubuque. He is intelligent, articulate, and willing to listen to his constituents. As vice president of a consulting company, he has worked extensively with municipalities, state, and federal governments, providing asset management, design programs, master plans, and budget recommendations. He has traveled the United States, seeing firsthand and what other cities are doing. He will bring an extraordinary perspective and fresh view to the council table. I encourage Ward 1 voters to vote for John on March 2nd. We have quite a few obituaries today, so I will only be reading the funeral services. Betty J. Dolter. Betty Elizabeth J. Dolter passed away on February 16, 2021 at Luther Manor, Grand Meadows, after a brief illness surrounded by her family. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, February 26, 2021 at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service, 3860 Asbury Road. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. Social distancing will be strictly enforced to protect Betty's family and friends. If you are not feeling well or are unable to attend, we encourage you to visit www.hskfhcares.com to send a message to Betty's family. The Mass of Christian Burial for Betty will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, February 27th, 2021 at Church of the Resurrection with Father Andy Upa as the celebrant. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. The Mass will be live streamed at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home's Facebook page and will also be available to view later at www.hskfhcares.com. The family would like to thank Dr. Stefan and his staff at Medical Associates Primary Care, Dr. Horowitz, Tricia, Travis, and Martha, and the nurses of the Mercy 1 ER and ICU, the nursing staff of 3 West Mercy 1, especially Candy, Jeremiah of Hospice of Dubuque, and though it was a short time, the nursing staff of Luther Manor Grand Meadows for the excellent care she received. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Dubuque County Right to Life, Church of the Resurrection, and Hospice of Dubuque. Terrence R. Powers, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin. Terrence R. Powers, 80, of Prairie du Chien, died on Sunday, February 21st, 2021. A Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, February 26th at St. Gabriel's Church of the Holy Family Parish, with burial in Calvary Cemetery, both in Prairie du Chien. Friends may call from 9:30 a.m. to the time of departure for the church Friday at Garrity Funeral Home in Prairie du Chien. Jane L. Schroeder, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Jane L. Schroeder, 68, of Lancaster, died on Tuesday, February 16, 2021. There will be no formal services. Melby Funeral Home and Crematory of Platteville is assisting the family. Dolores J. Lindsay. Dolores June Lindsay, 83, of Dubuque, died Monday, February 22, 2021, at her home in Dubuque. Visitation will be from 4 until 7 p.m. Friday, February 26, 2021, at St. Paul Lutheran Church, 2025 Jackson Street. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. If you are not feeling well or unable to attend, we encourage you to visit www.hskfhcares.com to send a message to Dolores' family. An additional visitation will be held from 9:30 a.m. until the time of the funeral service at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, February 27th, 2021, at St. Paul Lutheran Church, with Pastor Jonathan Crawford officiating. Masks are required, and we ask that you please respect our current social distancing requirements. Burial will be in the Council Hill Cemetery immediately following the service. The service will be live streamed on Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home's Facebook page and will also be available to view later at www.hskfhcares.com. A memorial has been established to St. Paul Lutheran Church in Dolores' name. Hoffman, Schneider, and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Services is in the care of the arrangements. Arno L. Biddick, Montfort, Wisconsin. Arno L. Biddick, 84, of Montfort, died on Saturday, February 20th, 2021. Private visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to noon, Friday, February 26th, at Soman Larson Funeral Home in Montfort. Private graveside services will be held at 12:30 p.m. Friday at Greenwood Cemetery in Platteville. Arthur E. Ruby, 87, of Dubuque, died on Monday, February 22nd, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, February 27th at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, Dubuque. A funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Donna D. Conley. Donna D. Conley, 89, of Dubuque, died on Monday, February 22nd, 2021. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, February 27th at Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, Dubuque, where complete arrangements are pending. Edward B. Godekin, Bernard, Iowa. Edward B. Godekin, 84, of Bernard, Iowa, passed away Tuesday, February 16, 2021, at Mercy One Medical Center in Dubuque, Iowa. Private family visitation and massive Christian burial will be held on Saturday, February 27th, at Holy Family New Melloray Catholic Church. Massive Christian burial will be live-streamed at 11 a.m. on the Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory Facebook page. Burial will follow at Holy Family Cemetery. Online condolences may be left at www.leonardfuneralhome.com. The family would like to thank the Bernard Rescue Squad, Sherry Kletchen, Mercy One ICU Unit for all the support and kindness the family received during this difficult time. Memorials may be given to the Bernard Rescue Squad or Holy Family New Melloray Parish. Gregory P. Staskal, Cuba City, Wisconsin. Gregory P. Staskal, 74, of Cuba City, Wisconsin, passed away on Saturday, February 20th, 2021. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, February 25th, at the United Methodist Church in Cuba City, Wisconsin, with Pastor Jessica Graham and Pastor Rick McDermott officiating. Burial will be in Mount Pleasant Cemetery in Cuba City. Family and friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. today at Howdeshield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City, and on Thursday, February 25th, from 9:30 a.m. until the time of service at the United Methodist Church in Cuba City. Due to current state and health regulations, face masks and social distancing guidelines will be implemented. The Howdeshield Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cuba City, Wisconsin, is serving the family. The family of Greg Staskal would like to extend a special thank you to the staff at Hospice of Dubuque and to Dr. Mark Herman at the Grand River Medical Group Integrated Cancer Center for their kindness and compassion shown to Greg and his family. In lieu of plants and flowers, a Gregory P. Staskal Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be mailed to Howdeshield Funeral Home CEO Greg Staskal Family, P.O. Box 825, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.haudenshield.com. Frank B. Peralta, Vancouver, Washington. Frank B. Peralta, 81, passed away on Tuesday, February 16, 2021, Vancouver, Washington. A private celebration of life will be held today by the family. Memorials will benefit the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Thank you for your love and support. Gerald L. Munns, Schulzburg, Wisconsin. Gerald, known as Jerry L. Munns, 81, of Schulzburg, Wisconsin, passed away on February 13, 2021 at UW Madison Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. A private family service will be held on Saturday, February 27th with Pastor Bill Vassy at Howdeshield Funeral Home and Crematory Services in Cuba City, Wisconsin. Sharing of memories with family and friends will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Saturday, February 27th at Howdeshield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City. Due to current state and health regulations, face masks and social distancing guidelines will be implemented. A private burial family burial will be held at a later date at the Chapel Hill Memorial Garden Cemetery in Freeport, Illinois. Howdeshield Family Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City is assisting the family. In lieu of plants and flowers, a Gerald known as Jerry L. Munns Memorial Fund has been established. Memorials may be mailed to Houdinshield Funeral Home, CO Jerry Munns Family, Box 825, Cuba City, Wisconsin, 53807. Sean P. Scott, Lancaster, Wisconsin. Sean P., known as S.P. Scott, 51 of Lancaster, Wisconsin, passed away unexpectedly at his home on Saturday, February 20th, 2021. In keeping with Sean's wishes, there will be no services. Cards of condolences may be sent to 1160 West Maple Street, Lancaster, Wisconsin, 53813. The Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Lancaster is assisting the family. Sean's family wishes to extend their sincere appreciation to Lancaster EMS, Lancaster PD, Doug Bartow with the Grant County Coroner's Office, and Martin Schwartz Funeral Homes and Crematory. Online condolences, www.martinschwartzfuneralhomes.com. Betty J. Zuckerman, Santa Fe, New Mexico. Betty Joyce Zuckerman, 88, passed away on November 21st, 2020 in Santa Fe, New Mexico, with her daughter at her side after a brief illness. Betty had been living in Santa Fe since 2007. Memorials may be given in her honor to the Dubuque Regional Humane Society. Funeral services. Most funeral homes and churches are practicing social distancing guidelines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Contact specific locations for more information. Mary J. Brutch, Dubuque. Visitation at 10:30 a.m. Friday, February 26, Mount Carmel Mother House Chapel. Massive Christian burial, 10:45 a.m. Friday at the chapel. Roger A. Ewers, Jr., Platteville, Wisconsin. Visitation at 10 to 11:45 a.m. Thursday, February 25th, Melby Funeral Home and Crematory, Platteville. Services at noon Thursday at the funeral home. Damian Grub, Stockton, Illinois. Visitation at 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, February 27th, Herman Funeral Home, Stockton. Services 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Robert E. Henning, Cascade, Iowa. Celebration of Life, 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, February 25th, Community Presbyterian Church, Cascade. Susan B. Huengarth, H-U-E-H-N-E-R-G-A-R-T-H, Bellevue, Iowa. Visitation at 9 to 11:30 a.m. Saturday, February 27th at St. John's Lutheran Church, Bellevue. Services at noon Saturday at the church. Christine E. Noonan, Dubuque. Massive Christian burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Anthony Catholic Church, Dubuque. Moving to the sports page, Girls Prep Bowling, Iowa Class 3A State Tournament. Rams save best for last at state tournament. Senior Hempstead finish 4-5 in Class 3A team standing at Cadillac by Jim Leitner. The Dubuque senior girls bowling team didn't have much of a chance to show its true potential until the final meets of the season. Then the Rams proved they could compete with the very best in the state. Senior placed as its top four bowlers in the top 20 on Tuesday afternoon en route to a fourth-place team performance at the Iowa Class 3A State Tournament at Cadillac Lanes in Waterloo, Iowa. Dubuque Hempstead, behind sixth-place individual finisher Zoe Schultz, took fifth in the team race. Quote, just getting to state was exciting enough, and quote, first-year senior coach Peggy Pregler-Liebfield said, quote, but to finish fourth and miss third place by only 7 pins, which is basically the difference in making one more spare, holy cow, that's incredible. I don't know if anyone believed this was a possibility throughout the year. I'm still kind of in disbelief, but the girls showed their true potential today, and I am super, super proud of them, end quote. The Rams won only 3 of their 14 meets this season while dealing with coronavirus quarantines throughout the season. The 6 girls who competed at state on Tuesday bowled together as a team only a couple of times before the postseason, so chemistry suffered. On Tuesday, the Rams shot 2,867 and finished within striking distance of third place Cedar Falls. A Brianna Reed led senior with an 11th place 225 to 193, total 418, in her final high school meet, followed by freshman Clara Pregler in a tie for 13th with 214 to 191, total 405. Senior Emma Clancy in 15th with a 220 to 180, 400 total. Freshman Mackenzie Lang in 20th with a 174 to 205, 379 total. And junior Ella Pregler in 29th with a 167 to 180, 347 total. Sophomore Jacqueline Huckerings, 156 to 132, total 258, did not factor in the Rams 1,949, though the individual portion of the tournament. Senior shot Baker games of 247, 162, 139, 162, and 208 for a total of 918. Quote, it's a little bittersweet with being a senior and this being my last meet, but I'm so proud of my girls, Reed said. We went out with a bang, just like we wanted to. It was a great last meet to my high school career. There were times of the season where we were kind of on our own worst enemy and we didn't bowl as a team as much as we would have liked. But at the end, we really got the hype going. When we were loud, we were together and we were yelling and screaming all day today, end quote. The Mustangs tallied a 2,774 behind the junior Schultz, who shot a 233 to 203, 436 total, to claim sixth place. She finished just three pins behind third place Owaya Pilcher of Ottumwa. Quote, today felt really smooth for me, kind of like a repeat of regionals last week, Schultz said. It helped that we were bowling in the same house as regionals and had kind of the same lane format. I got in the mindset of doing what I did at regionals as far as helping the team as much as I could. The lanes were really cooperative and I was able to channel myself in. I felt really locked in, end quote. The Mustangs got off to a bit of a slow start because of an issue with the approach on their pair of lanes before the individual portion of the meet began. After about 15-minute delay to clean a sticky substance off the surface, Hempstead found itself playing catch-up time-wise. Hempstead junior Aaron Langle placed in 19th with a 203 to 183, 386 total, followed by sophomore Libby Leach with a 172 to 192, 364 total, and senior Kirsten Mitchell with a 199 to 165, 364 total to tie for 24th, and senior Beth Joel with a 153 to 179, 332 total for 36th, while senior Emily Mueller's 170 to 138, 308 total did not factor in the Mustangs' 1,882 through individuals. Hempstead shot Baker games of 205, 154, 203, 170, and 160 to finish 135 pins clear of Iowa City High for 5th in the 8th team field. Quote, I was really proud of the girls because they kept plugging away and showed me a lot of perseverance and tenacity all day long, end quote. Hempstead coach Teresa Cheever said, quote, they never got down on themselves all day. They kept their focus and never gave up. The delay did throw them off their rhythm a little bit, but once they got going, they were fine. They weren't going to use the problem as any kind of excuse, end quote. Ottumwa won the team title at 3,076. 54 pins ahead of Cedar Rapids Jefferson. Jefferson Savannah Edmonds won the individual title with a 225 to 246, 471 total, while Ottumwa's Zoe Siemens finished 16 pins behind. I am so sorry if I read those scores incorrectly. I don't know much about bowling, so I'm not quite sure the best way to read them. I'm just kind of reading the words on the page. I'm sorry. I'm moving to the next sports article. Boys prep basketball, Dyersville Beckman 55, WuCon 49, Iowa Class 2A District Final, Blazers back to sub-state, Gallagher heats up as Beckman claims the Class 2A District title, by Steve Ortman, Manchester, Iowa. Padraig Gallagher wasn't having any of it. Every time WuCon made a push during the Iowa Class 2A District 7 final on Tuesday night, the Dyersville Beckman sharpshooter torched the Nets to turn the Indians away. Gallagher made 11 of 16 shot attempts for a game-high 27 points, including 4 3-pointers that all came with WuCon on their heels, as the Trailblazers claimed a district championship with a 55-49 recovery victory at West Delaware High School. Quote, the guys found Patty and screened for him, and quote, Beckman coach Michael Maloney said, quote, at the end of the day, it was a total team effort. The confidence was oozing from him, and we fed off it all that night, end quote. Jack Gelling scored 11 points, and Jacob Hermson added 10 as Beckman, 15-7, advanced to Saturday night's sub-state 4 championship game at against number 9 West Branch, 19-2, at a site to be determined with a trip to the Iowa State tournament on the line. The Blazers have reached Des Moines on 5 occasions, with the last coming in 2007. Quote, I saw them on film one time and they play zone, end quote, Maloney said of West Branch. Quote, but we were so focused on this game and considering where we've come from with all the adversity this year, we couldn't have a stumble. We're happy to be at sub-state. We've probably been there as much as any team in our class the last 20 years, and we just want to get over the hump, end quote. Beckman has come a long way since losing All-State point guard Mason White and his 20 points per game back in December due to a torn ACL. After a 7-0 start with White, the Blazers have gone 8-7 as the players continue to band together and find that right balance with the standout talent on the bench. Quote, we've seen how much he's put into the program, Gallagher said. To us, seeing him go down was just that much more motivational to try to get to state for him. We've been working our butts off to get there, and now we're one game away, end quote. Gallagher's hot start got the Blazers out to a quick lead. The 6'4" sophomore guard drilled a three, then followed with a tough drive to the rim before Hermsen's bucket to give Beckman an 11-3 lead. The Indians, 15-6, answered with a 10-5 run before Gallagher's drive for a deuce gave the Blazers an 18-13 lead to close the first. Wukong dialed up the physicality in the second quarter, and that led to 6 Beckman turnovers that powered a 17-10 run as the Indians staked to a 30-28 lead at halftime. Quote, it was just toughness, Gallagher said. They won state football, so they're big and tough. Our whole goal was to box out, rebound, and stay in control. Their whole game is to get you out of control, and we did a good job in the second half of staying in control, end quote. The Blazers sure did, and Gallagher was in the driver's seat. He scored 10 points in the third quarter as Beckman changed the game with an 18-9 spurt. Gallagher sank a runner in the lane, a jumper, and a tray in succession, and then capped it with a 1 minute and 12 seconds to play in the period with a deep three for a 46-36 advantage. Quote, we knew the talent was there, Maloney said. Being a sophomore, he's learning to find his role. It took a little bit of time because we knew we'd be having Mason there for a long time. We just told them to be patient because this will lead to some great things. Patty is realizing his talent with all of the work he puts in. It was going to click, end quote. Lincoln's Snitakers put back pulled the Indians within 46-43 with 6 minutes and 24 seconds to play, but Beckman wouldn't let them get any closer. Gallagher dropped another tray and a floater in the lane as the Blazers sealed it by holding Wukong to 4-for-20, shooting from the field in the fourth quarter. Quote, I put a lot of into my game, and it just came tonight, I guess, Gallagher said. This feels really good, end quote. And our last sports article, girls prep basketball, Dubuque Walhurt 52, Waverly Shell Rock 46, Iowa Class 4A Regional Final, Eagles Surge to Des Moines by Danny Miller, Waverly, Iowa. The Eagles Nest student section brought the noise and energy. The Eagles on the court were simply golden. Dubuque Walhurt earned a bid to next week's state tournament in Des Moines with a 52-46 victory at 5th-ranked Waverly Shell Rock on Tuesday night in the Class 4A Region 6 Championship. It is the Eagles' first trip to state since the 2012-2013 season. Quote, I'm very proud, Walhurt coach Chris Spiegler said. I'm especially proud because our seniors have just dedicated a lot of time to this game and it's paid off. We've put in extra time on the weekends and after practice to be in this position. I'm just really happy for them, end quote. In a hostile road environment, it was critically important for Walhurt to get off to a hot start, and the Eagles did just that. Emma Donovan and Anna Chandelier drained three-pointers to set the tone and jump out to an early lead. Just as important was their ability to withstand a mini 5-0 run by Waverly Shell Rock. Mary Kate King's jumper at the buzzer knotted the score at 13 in a fast-paced first quarter, proving the Eagles were not intimidated. Quote, it was very important to get off to a quick start, Spiegler said. We wanted to dominate and say we are going to take control of this game, and I think we did that, end quote. Walhurt, 13-9, did indeed seize control with an 8-0 run to open the second quarter. Back-to-back three-point plays by Chandelier, who had 14 points on the night, highlighted the scoring run. The Eagles used a zone defense to perfection, baffling the Gohawks, and held them scoreless until 3 minutes and 9 seconds remaining in the half. King's two free throws and Mariah Freed's off-balance three-pointer at the buzzer gave Walhurt a 28-19 lead at halftime. Quote, we just figured if we could push the pace from from the start, they wouldn't be able to match our energy, King said. Our goal was to make them hurt first instead of digging ourselves a hole, and we did just that, end quote. The Eagles came out just as energized to start the second half as they outscored the Gohawks 14-7 in a crucial third quarter. King's nifty spin move opened the scoring, and her Trey at 3:01 extended the advantage to 39-22. Donovan's drive to the bucket and free throw with 1 second left gave them a 42-26 lead entering the final 8 minutes. Waverly Shell Rock, 21-3, opened the fourth on a 6-0 run to cut the deficit to 10 before Nora King's triple at 4:41 stopped the momentum. The Gohawks scored 6 more unanswered late in the game to get within 7 and applied a full court press, creating a couple late turnovers. It was too little too late as Mary Kate King's 2 free throws with 21 seconds left iced the game for good. Quote, it indescribable, end quote, said Mary Kate King, who finished with 13 points. Quote, it's what I've dreamed of since second grade, so I'm beyond excited, end quote. Walher earned the number 8 seed in next week's state tournament and will match up against a top-seeded Glenwood 19-3 at 11 a.m. Tuesday at Wells Fargo Arena. The winner will play either number 4 DeWitt Central 16-2 or number 5 North Scott 15-2 in the semifinals. The other side of the bracket includes number 2 Ballard 21-1 versus number 7 Harlan 17-5. And number 3 Dallas Center Grimes 20-2 versus number 6 Bondurant Faller 15-5. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Wednesday, February 24th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's recording online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day and you are enjoying this nice weather.